listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes! It hits the back of the net. Oh, my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Dortmund are done. Robin Lewandowski confirms he will be joining Bayern Munich at the end of this season as the Polish striker decides to sign a pre-contract agreement. January, the Capital One Cup brought them thrills and some spills, but Manchester United take on Liverpool as Luis Suarez gets set to return tonight. And for the first time ever, Neymar and Messi on the same score sheet for the same side as Barcelona get a thumping 4-1 win in La Liga football last night against Real Sociedad, with the Diamond Duo both getting their names on the score sheet. Welcome to Wednesday's edition of World Football Daily. I'm Oliver the Juice Wilson, bringing you the news and, of course, the views from around the world of football. There's plenty to get into, and we've got an absolutely action-packed show coming up today. A little later on, we're going to have Mr. Gerard Peters for the first time in a long time here on World Football Daily to talk about all things Italian football. We'll be talking about Conte and the new substitution rule. What on earth are Juventus on about? We will be talking about that a little later on. But there's a man who we wanted to get on the show a little earlier this week. We've been able to track him down and get him on this Wednesday. He's a man who knows about all things up in the northeast of England, of course, when it comes to football. And with such a busy week taking place at Sunderland, we figured it was only fitting we should get him on the show at some point. So joining us today as our first guest for the show here on World Football Daily, we're getting straight into it with our man in all things northeast football, Mr. Christian Hennage, joining us here on World Football Daily. Christian, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show, mate. How have you been keeping this week? I imagine it's been quite a busy one for you.
I've been keeping well, dissecting the fallout that is the Decanio Revolution.
It is a pretty emphatic fallout as well. When you saw Decanio walking over to the fans on Saturday at the Hawthorns, did you think that was it? Was that a man who looked like he was on his way out already? Obviously, we'd heard about trouble off the pitch in general with the players not enjoying his methods and the fans getting frustrated. Or did you still think there was a chance left after Saturday's result?
I thought it was going to be hard, but then he'd done similar at Crystal Palace in their previous away game. So it didn't feel like he was signing a death warrant. If anything, I guess it depends on your perception. To a cynic of Decanio, it's him playing centre stage. It's him wanting to be the main player in the situation at his Sunderland. I think, honestly, there's part of me thinks that's him fronting up. It's him going to the patrons, to those who've paid the money to travel down there, and saying that wasn't good enough and that things can be better. Yes, it was, but slightly pantomime, and perhaps if it was Jose Mourinho, there'd be less condemnation for it. But I didn't think that would be the last instance of Decanio at Sunderland. I thought he might just get one or two more games.
Now, I made my thoughts on this dismissal very clear on Monday's show, Christian, so I know I'm coming at it from a slight bias here, but did you think that the way the media portrayed that moment, along with a lot of Decanio's other moments at Sunderland already, did you think that there really was such a force and will from the fans to get Decanio out when, to me, it appeared like they focused in on a handful of fans that were actually calling for his head on Saturday, yet the majority of them inside the Hawthorns were applauding the team still and applauding Decanio as he stood there?
Well, I think, you can find in a fan base, you can find any number of people to fit the agenda that you're trying to put across. And I think, it was quite easy to find fans who were a little bit dismayed with Decanio. As you rightly say, though, there were equally those who were still very supportive of him. and understood that it was going to take time. At Swindon, he had a similar run of form to begin with, and then they went on a 15-game unbeaten run. Now, it would be too easy just to say that the same was going to happen at Sunderland, but we'll never know. It may have. I mean, there was certainly improvements in that squad. I think Adam Johnson typifies the benefit of his methods. The problem comes in the fact that I think when he's at Swindon, it's a lot easier for him to just command respect, given that he's played for Milan and Juventus and a host of other top clubs. Put him in that same Premier League dressing room, it's not as impressive, because you've got, for example, Emmanuel Giacchirini, who's an Italian international, well-established, had a good career at Juventus, a very solid one, won Serie A, etc. And you have to forge that respect through the way that you operate, not your resume of previous achievements. And I think for him, he didn't do that. He just didn't give them the opportunity to forge a bond with them. And he just assumed that, you know, when they don't do things good, then you tell them off. And unfortunately, a Premier League football, I think, is far too fragile for that. Some of them, as that old, you know, staple goes, need the arm around them. Some of them need gentle coax. Others will do good things when you kick them off the backside, but not all of them.
And Di Canio is the man that will kick people up the backside mighty heftily, I'm sure, in a dressing room. People have come out and said that his methods were old. He was a dinosaur, if you will, in terms of Premier League management. Do you really think that Di Canio's methods are just too old to work at any level in that top flight? Anywhere kind of below, yes, it may work in the Championship, but at top flight level, it's just gone beyond that now. You can't do this at all.
I'm not entirely sure if I subscribe to that belief, because, again, what's old school or prehistoric about wanting your players to have a good diet and do two sessions a day? I think, if anything, if you can maximise your squad's fitness levels, you have to do that. And you could argue that perhaps some teams aren't doing that. And, again, there were certain players in that squad when he arrived, who will remain nameless, were overweight. There was one in particular who, funnily enough, criticised Canio as he left the club, who was significantly overweight. And you could see every time he took to the pitch. And for me, I think that, again, yes, there are certain elements of his methodology, icing coke, which, having spoke to a nutritionist that couldn't fathom why that was an issue, the coke's all through the trouble. I can speak from experience on that one. But the ice, I'm not entirely sure why. So, yeah, there were elements that strayed into, not lunacy, but perhaps being too strict in terms of diet. But I think the overall message was fairly understandable, and it was the kind of change Sunderland needed, because towards the end of Martin O'Neill, so just before Di Canio came in, they were really just seeping into the precipice of falling into the Championship, and from there you have to wonder what happens next for them.
I've found the whole situation personally, Kristen, very peculiar with Di Canio. It was very much, nobody wanted him to succeed when he did come in, then he did succeed in keeping Sunderland up. And then it's been a matter of time until kind of failure, if you will, according to a lot of the press. Do you think, everybody's saying he's been sacked, you know, after 6 months. But with so much time off in the summer, of course, is it really, are you actually very shocked that it's happened 5 games into a Premier League season?
Well, I think saying 6 months is slightly misleading given how much time they've had off. He's had, you know, 13 games now. You could argue it's even harsh to say that, because the first 8 games were with a squad that wasn't his, in a situation he didn't conspire to put them in, and one that he ultimately saved them from. So to give him 5 games of that opening season seems incredibly short. I think his appointment was done without much forethought in terms of what they were bringing in, and it's come to a head now. The only issue, realistically, I could see with Di Canio was he was a little bit tactically naive, you know, expecting to play 4-4-2 with so many foreign players in there who just didn't speak the same language, who didn't really truly grasp how the Premier League operated yet. That, to me, was a little bit naive. Now, you could caveat that by saying that he didn't sign the players, and in fact, he made a point of saying that he wanted more English players, and I think that's one of the reasons, because he knew that the majority of the 14 new guys coming in were building a hefty language barrier in that squad. And again, the important thing is now, Sunderland don't have Di Canio to blame. They have to take full ownership of every problem that arises now, because he's not the scapegoat. He's not the lamentable, you know, comedian in front of the media. So their next move is going to be vital in terms of keeping that club up and stabilising it, because again, this will be the third manager in the space of 6 months. That's not a record that you really want to carry around for long. You want stability. We all, I think, as fans and even clubs, all strive for that stability, and Sunderland really need it now.
In terms of whoever comes in to create that stability to replace Di Canio, it's been highlighted that they're going to have to deal with these 14 new signings with a dressing room that doesn't all speak the same language and where communication is difficult. Is this, though, the same sort of problems that Di Canio was dealing with, but yet a new manager is going to be coming in and there's suddenly a sympathetic ear towards it? How does that play off to you when these are the same problems that the previous manager was obviously having to battle with because it's so early on in the season?
Well, I think a new manager has a perfect get out and saying, well, you know, these are my players, etc., etc., and they could very easily fall on that crutch. The truth is, and the matter is, it's not going to change. He's got those players. I mean, again, you've got Giacarini, who has a good pedigree. They're not terrible players by any stretch. I think, honestly, if any club signed one or two of the players that Sunderland have signed this summer, you'd be quite pleased, and you'd probably think, you know, we've got some bargains in there. The problem is that Sunderland have signed all of them in a clutch, and as you rightly say, the language problem has really kicked in. I mean, Di Canio even said, I can't even use words like squeeze up because that's too complicated for some of them. So I have to tell them just up, and that's when they know to move the defensive line forward. And when you can't even, you know, get to that basic a level, you can't really give any kind of significant instruction. So you're relying on understanding and interpretation of a different kind. And it'll be very interesting to see how the new manager approaches that. I personally thought, get it into 4-5-1 and grind out results. Don't try and be too expansive or smart with things at the minute, just because there's not that understanding there. And your opponents, just by proxy, will have a better understanding than your own team. So don't try and outplay them in that sense. Just keep things very simple.
Who is going to be this new manager coming in? There's obviously a lot of talk about Gus Poyet. Roberto Di Matteo's name has been thrown in as well. And what do you make of the calibre of these managers who are being predicted to come into the Sunderland now?
Well, there was a late suggestion that Murat Yakin from Basel was being considered. Now, that would be a left-field suggestion. But I think one of the names you mentioned there, Gustavo Poyet, seems to be the favourite. The mutterings are that while Roberto Di Matteo was definitely sounded out, it's not a job that he would be interested in. And I think to a degree you can almost see why, because he's coming off the back of his situation at Chelsea. He could probably do better, no disrespect to Sunderland, given many of their plight, really. And so Poyet kind of puts himself in the frame. The current caretaker, Kevin Ball, said that he would like to be considered, but I personally don't think he's got really nearly enough pedigree for that position. And Poyet does have a decent record. He obviously left Brighton in fairly acrimonious situation, and it wasn't the prettiest thing to watch, him finding out he'd been sacked live on television. but he's not a terrible coach. He's someone that I think will bring the same line of authority, but perhaps not as chronic. And thus, you think he could possibly cultivate something decent at Sunderland. I think he's got a job on, that's for sure. And the fact that he's made absolutely no secret of the fact he would like the job, and even that he cancelled some interviews yesterday that he had with media, and I think he was due at a Capital One Cup event as well that he also had to cancel. It gives you indications that he's at least had talks with Sunderland. How far along they are, it's difficult to gauge at the minute, but the word coming from those closest to Sunderland is that this appointment will take time. Purely because last time, you could argue they rushed into it, made a now seemingly bad decision that has cost them a significant amount of money because they've had to pay the full amount of Di Canio's contract.
Is Gustavo Poyet a bit like Paolo Di Canio light, if you will? You know, a reasonably fiery character on occasions, Poyet, and he won't shy away from a confrontation in a dressing room or away from the pitch as well.
No, I don't think that's an abstract suggestion. He does bear resemblance to Canio in that sense, and I think as well he's willing to work within the structure at Sunderland. It's a fairly new one with Roberto De Fante, the director of football, and Valentino Angeloni, the chief scout, who between them, you don't suggest a name of a player, you suggest the qualities you want, and then they go out and seek them, almost like a matchmaker, and then you get to pick. So it's a little bit different than perhaps what most, you know, English-based managers are used to, but I think it's a system he would thrive in, and I think it's one that, again, the opportunity of the Premier League will often make you ignore certain facets, less desirable facets of a job, I feel, and for Poy in particular, this could be a very good job for him, because again, he has a really early opportunity to forge himself as a very good manager with more than enough games to rescue Sunderland. I think that's perhaps something we've forgot, is that we're only, what is it, less than half a dozen games into the season. That's a little over a month's worth of football. There's not a great deal really been established already.
Kristen, we'll let you get out on this question because we've taken up plenty of your time. We've had almost as much time talking with you about this one managerial change than we normally do with the entirety of the Premier League. But with this, what's happened with Paolo Di Canio, should us as football kind of romantics, if you will, those who want to see kind of the game not governed by money and governed more by the love and desire and passion in and around the game and getting players to play for a club and for the badge again, should we as football romantics have wanted Paolo Di Canio to succeed at Sunderland, or is it too much to kind of dislike the guy because of everything else that surrounds him?
I think that you have to take things objectively. I think it's very easy to be drawn into this idea that he is, you know, a fascist, crazy, slightly aloof manager who broke into Swindon's ground to steal back photographs. I think if I was to suggest to anyone, for every piece you read about, you know, Di Canio being slightly aloof and crazy, just read something by Gabriel Marcotti, because there's a man who knows him better than most. And as he pointed out in his piece for ESPN this week, the story about him bursting into the training ground, he was let in by his assistant, and it was to get, amongst other things, a photo that his daughter had drawn for him. And I think that's where you have to understand, is that it is very easy, I think, to distort people's image in today's society. But from having been in close quarters with Di Canio, albeit not alone in a group setting, he seemed fairly personal, he seemed very nice. I think that, yeah, he's got political views that he should have established and should have clarified very early on, but I don't think the club helped him there either. I think they were equally as ambiguous and perhaps should have pushed him to do that early on. In England, it's kind of interesting. You know, I was speaking to someone this week who said that in America, they don't seem to really give as much consideration to those kind of extraneous thoughts, and I can see why, but here, it's a holistic approach. You take everything on board. I can only say what I've seen from interacting with the man. He seems a nice guy. I'm sure there are players in that squad who would say I'm completely wrong and he's, you know, a dictator. Ultimately, they've had the final say and they've got him sacked. I still think he'll find work, just perhaps not in the Premier League anytime soon. He may have to venture back home for that.
Actually, Kristen, sorry, I know we've taken up far too much of your time, but you raised the point about the players. Is that the right... Is that quite a bitter moment as well in this, the fact that the players have been able to go to a chairman and say, we don't want to be managed by this man anymore? Is that quite significant in this player power role that we always talk about in English football?
Well, the rumour is that he invited them to do that in the same way that he invited Martin Atkinson to send him off, when he said, look, you know, if you want to complete your job here today against Arsenal, you'll send me off. And of course, what did Martin Atkinson do? He sent him off. So you could say that that's another flaw of his character, is that, you know, that tempting of authority, that pushing the buttons and winding people up. Now, if that's the case, then you can't really blame the players for going to Margaret Byrne, the chief executive, and saying, look, we don't want to work for this guy anymore. It's not the nicest way to end a relationship, but again, I think that's just a strain of that naivety creeping in again, and thinking that Premier League footballers, and to be honest, footballers in general, they're always going to be more important than the manager, because without the players, you haven't got a game. Without the manager, you can still, you know, elect someone within the squad to put the you know, the board, the numbers on the board. And I think it's not the greatest way to end the situation at Sunderland, unquestionably. But if the players felt that they weren't wanting to work for him, then I guess his position becomes untenable, because, like I say, they are the most important component of that football club.
all change at Sunderland, and the Black Cats will be searching for a new manager to reignite their very sloppy start to the season. Kristen, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show, mate. We've taken up far too much of your time discussing Paolo Di Canio, and I'm sure you've been right.
What he would have wanted. I think it was perfectly that.
It's what he would. He's not dead yet, Kristen. You know, it's he's not done yet. And I still maintain that he, you know, Dave Jones will be kicked out of Sheffield Wednesday, and Paolo will step into the breach and return home finally once again to Hillsborough.
With Young as his assistant, I assume.
Oh, that without a doubt, without a doubt. but Kristen, mate, it's an absolute pleasure to have had you on the show once again, man. And we look forward to catching up with you very soon, indeed, man. Take care.
Always a privilege, never a chore, mate. Thanks for having me.
Cheers, boss. Kristen Hennage there joining us here on World Football Daily, talking about Paolo Di Canio and Sunderland and the fall of the Italian manager. I think we've spent plenty of time on this today, but it's really nice when we do get somebody who's very much specialised and focused on that certain area that you can really dig deep into this story. I mean, you know, we spent, I guess, around about 20-odd minutes on it there, but always a pleasure to have Kristen on, and very good at just neatly tidying up the any loose ends that we've got going on as well. It looks like Gus Poyet will eventually become the Sunderland manager, but we will see. It's going to apparently take a long time, according to Kristen. We will move now from one Italian to a little bit of Italian football on the broader topic. I'm delighted to say that joining us is our second guest of the show here on Wednesday in midweek. We have a man who has been away from World Football Daily, not just for a few weeks, not just for a few months, but for damn a few years. It's been a long time since we had him on the WFD airways, and I'm delighted to say he's back once again, joining me here on World Football Daily to talk all things Italian football from Bleacher Report. Mr. Jared Peters joining us here to talk about all things Italian football. Jared, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show, mate. I normally ask how people are doing, but I guess we won't cover a few years' worth. How have you been keeping at the early part of the football season, mate?
Not bad. It's been a good late summer. I don't know what I must have done to you fellas last time that you kept me off for so many years, but hopefully my performance is better today.
Don't worry, we will forgive and forget whatever it was. I don't think we can remember here, Jared. I think it's just been far too long indeed since we've had you on the show, though. Here to talk about all things Italian football, of course, and there's plenty of games coming up tonight, but there's been a fair bit of news coming out in and around the league. Let's start first with this new substitute rule at Juventus that's been brought in by Antonio Conte after Pirlo walked off down the tunnel on the weekend after being substituted. Pirlo's walk off down the tunnel rather than sitting on the bench, which we're so accustomed to seeing players do anyway. Was that a sign of frustration, do you think, about being substituted? A bit of tension between Pirlo and the club, do you think? Or just absentmindedly almost kind of just walking down the tunnel nonchalantly, did you think?
Well, Conte is trying to downplay if there was any tension in his comments today. Obviously, now he has introduced this new etiquette rule that players must sit on the bench after being substituted. This was actually the second match in a row that Pirlo was taken off. The return of Claudio Marchisio has kind of given Conte four really top-notch central midfielders from which to choose. And the one that I think he's really trying to work into his plans is Paul Pogba, who's just been absolutely fantastic. So Pirlo is kind of realizing at this point, I think, that he's not a 90-minute man every match anymore. Last season, he was substituted once the entire Serie A campaign. So, and at his age, that's quite impressive. So he's also not used to coming off during a match. Juventus, though, I think they're really going to be targeting other competitions as well this year in the new Champions League magazine. Conte was talking about what they learned from their exit to Bayern Munich last season, and he was really bigging up their upcoming match against Real Madrid in the Champions League, and so they're going to need some sort of rotation to make that all happen. Already, Conte is the kind of manager who trusts very few of his players. He's very strict, and he won't really give you much of a chance unless he really, really trusts you. So that he does have an option here in the midfield can only actually be good for Juventus, I think, if they are targeting multiple trophies this season. Pirlo is just going to have to be a sport about it. And to Conte's credit, I think he's handling a legend. And today he really tried just to downplay the situation. He said Pirlo didn't know the rule when he went down the tunnel because the rule obviously was just only introduced now. So Pirlo didn't violate anything. So give credit to Conte for that. He's going to be managing a bit bigger of a squad this season, and we'll see how much of a diplomat he proves to be.
It's quite a hefty punishment that he's imposed with this new rule. 1 month banishment, if you will, from the squad if you walk down the tunnel. Is it a bit excessive, or is it Conte's way of saying, look, I don't want any more trouble like this rearing its ugly head for us to have to deal with? We've already got so much to deal with on and off the pitch with in terms of winning another Scudetto and doing well in the Champions League. This is the kind of thing I don't want to see. So I'm just going to take a hard line stance on this and make sure everybody knows straight away so it's just not a problem again.
Yeah, it's extremely excessive. That being said, I don't think we're going to see a single incident like this again this season from Juventus. Mm. I would be very curious to see what the fallout was if someone did do that. You would imagine the headlines would be crazy the next day. But this is Conte being Conte. He's a stubborn manager. He's a very, very strict manager. I happen to like him. I think most Juventus supporters do like him. This is a very hard line he's taken. But since he's come into the team, this hard line, this I'm only going to trust very few of you kind of policy has only worked out well for them. So I think he's got quite a bit of credit here to play with, and he's using that on this new etiquette legislation, if you will.
Last one on Juventus, Gerard, because there's been obviously Carlos Tevez has been shining quite brightly at Juventus since coming in and bagged 3 goals this season. And you talk about Paul Pogba there as well and his rise over the last year or so at the club. Fernando Llorente finally gets on the score sheet for Juventus, his first league goal this season for them. What have you made of Llorente coming in? Because this was a player that was out of a Bilbao squad for all of last year, pretty much. And really, people thought could be kind of off half a step off, if you will, going into this season. How have you rated Llorente coming into the side?
Oliver, you just cut out there for a second when you were mentioning the Llorente question. Could you just repeat that one?
Yeah, of course. I was just asking what you thought of Llorente and his start at Juventus when other people have kind of been hogging the headlines. He's gone very much under the radar, but got his first goal this weekend.
He did, and he started up front with Tevez. That actually surprised me. I thought they might bring him off the bench to do that, but to his credit, he did start. He did score. Llorente's been one that I've been up and down on over the past few years. Last season, his attitude at Bilbao was just horrendous. He hardly got a game as a result. He was already moving to Juve. He knew the move was coming in the summertime. He had been angling for it for a long time. So I think already if he comes through at Juventus and scores 15, 16, 17 goals, that would be impressive to me. It would be a bonus for them. Vucinic is a very popular player there up front with Tevez. So Llorente again gives them another option that Conte will be needing as he pushes into multiple competitions this season. He can't keep riding the same 2 forwards week in, week out. Having that option could only be good for everyone there.
We'll move away from Juventus now, Gerard, and look at obviously AC Milan, a club in a fair bit of trouble both on and off the pitch. The racist chants coming from the fans and the Curva Sud being shut for their next home game, and Mario Balotelli causing problems on the pitch. How big an important time is this for Allegri to see how he deals with Balotelli?
Yeah, well, he kind of criticized him in his comments today, and obviously now because of Balotelli's behavior, he's coming into a few matches worth of a ban here, which this team definitely can't afford that after just losing Kevin Prince-Boateng. Al Shaarawy's injured. Now you have Balotelli suspended for 3 matches. Up top, this is an AC Milan side that can't really afford that lack of depth, if you will. I think in the Bologna game, Rabinho will get a start up top with Matri and Bersa, and when you have a front line of Bersa, Matri, and Urbino, you don't really think AC Milan here. So I'm a little concerned. If I would be a Milan fan, I would be a little concerned that we've let Ibrahimovic go. We've now lost Balotelli for a while. We have Al Shaarawy injured. There's not a lot here that convinces me that this side can beat Sampdoria today. There's quite a few Serie A matches today. And going forward, Milan would be one that I would be concerned about. Allegri, if he can get them even into within the Champions League places by the end of the season, I think he'd be doing pretty well.
Oh, cheers, Gerard, for putting so much faith in me and my Milan side. Thanks. Thanks for boosting them very nicely there. On the weekend, of course, we had the Rome derby as well. Traditionally, you know, one of the biggest games in Italian football, one of the biggest games in Europe, really, when Roma meet Lazio. But I don't know whether it was the early start or what, but it was there was a seemingly a lack of intensity to this game, and it didn't produce too much, especially in a rather boring, I have to say, opening 45 minutes. What was your take on the Rome derby? Were Roma convincing 2-0 winners, did you think?
Not so much, but I don't think they'll be too concerned about that. They moved joint top of the table with that win with Napoli. They've only given up a single goal against all season. I think Rudy Garcia's AS Roma will be this type of team that really puts their first bit of pride into keeping clean sheets and being very organized at the back. And given the players that they also gave up attacking-wise during the summer, they have to take that kind of I don't know if it's caution, but they have to be a little bit more concerned with their defensive football, if you will. What I found interesting is that Fabio Capello, who's doing some commentary for Fox in Italy now, had said he had wished Daniele De Rossi had moved to Manchester United at some point during his career. I kind of found that to be a little bit curious. De Rossi, for me, I think in Rudy Garcia's Roma is going to be an absolutely vital player and has been already. Strootman was a fantastic pickup. This is going to be a team in Roma very much organized from the back out. In the past few seasons, Roma have been playing mullet football. You know, it's been a party in the back, and that's totally going to be changing now.
Oh, that's a fantastic line, mullet football. Very, very nice. Very nice, Jerry. With this Roma side, of course, Francesco Totti signing a new extension to keep him at the club until he's around about 40 years old. I mean, Daniele De Rossi's been waiting to take on the mantle of Roma's glory boy. But for Totti to be staying on, do you think he can continue to be as big an impact player to that sort of age?
We keep waiting for him not to be. And every time that he does go through a bit of a funk, we always say, we you know, oh, this is the end of Totti, you know, Totti's passed it now, blah, blah, blah. He's proven all of us wrong every single time. When it comes to a player like this, I don't think a club like Roma, where he is possibly worshipped more at that club than any other player is at their current club in Europe. I'm not sure you can go too wrong by continuing to extend him. You obviously do run the risk. You don't want to bring him keep bringing him out if he is past it, but he has consistently proven not to be. I don't see a problem there. I know people try to make something out of it quite often, but I just don't see a problem there yet anyway.
And just finally, in some of the top sides, of course, in Serie A, Inter Milan on the weekend with this 7-0 thumping of Sassuolo. Seven goals against a newly promoted side. Is this the kind of style that we'll see from Inter that is actually making people think they can be a Champions League stroke, maybe even title contender up there with the likes of Fiorentina? Or is it maybe a 7-0 win over someone like Sassuolo, maybe just kind of getting everybody a little bit too excited?
Well, maybe a little bit of both. It makes you wonder how many Napoli are going to stuff by Sassuolo in their match. Napoli are another fantastic story so far this season. But regarding Inter, I think we are going to see some more goals from them from Walter Mazzarri. They're a very counter-attacking side. Getting Milito back in the 7-0 thumping being able to bring him back in a match like that was very good for them. I think they'll use him from the bench again against Fiorentina tomorrow. But one player that's impressed me over the past number of games is Taider, playing in the midfield for Inter, plays a little bit kind of to the inside left, working those channels there. Ricky Alvarez, who last season I was a little bit hot and cold on, has been very, very good this season. They kind of play five across midfield in front of a three-man defense. They can soak a lot up and hit you very quickly and with a lot of width. And I think Antonio Conte was right in his recent comments pointing out that Inter could be a very serious title contender this season. Nothing we've seen from them, including the draw against Juventus, where they played extremely well in that second half, would dissuade me from that.
Inter, of course, take on Fiorentina, as you say, tomorrow night. A real benchmark for them to see if they can compete with those top sides in Serie A. How do you see this one playing out? Can Inter's defence cope with that Fiorentina attack that's been lauded by so many fans of Serie A at the start of this season?
They can. That will be a very good test for them. That's a good point. it works out well from that Mario Gomez is injured, so he won't be featuring in that one. You'll have but Rossi's in good form. He'll be playing up top. Joaquin will be supporting him, as will Fernandez and Valero. Fiorentina are definitely one of the more eye-catching sides to watch in Italy. If you're watching a game simply for to be entertained and to watch good football, they're definitely one that I would recommend. Of course, for those who aren't that familiar with the side, they picked up Ambrosini from AC Milan during the summer to kind of keep things a little bit tighter in the midfield. He'll start tomorrow. I think that is a very good test for Inter and for this new kind of three-man defensive unit that Mazzarri has been playing. And Inter, of course, played a similar system last season, but they kept kind of going back and forth with it to the four-man set. They're going to be consistently three-man this year. That is going to be a good test for them. Of course, not having Mario Gomez to deal with will make it a bit easier.
Gerard, it's the first time we've had you back in a long time here on World Football Daily, and so we are at the very start of the season still, especially in Italy, with only four games played. At the moment, who are you seeing as being the winners of this Serie A title? Is it going to be Juventus's comfortably, do you think?
Not comfortably. I do think whoever finishes above Juventus, it's the old cliche, whoever finishes above Juventus will win Serie A this season. Napoli are we haven't talked about them yet. They're definitely one of the hot talking points early on. They're a team that right now is operating with a lot of intensity and a lot of good feeling. There's a lot of goodwill around that team right now. But you do wonder what happens if they face a little bit of adversity. Does their bubble burst a little bit? Do they fall back down to earth as quickly as they rocketed up to cloud nine? So that would be interesting for me if all of a sudden they did face a little bit of adversity coming up here, because they are the team that I would definitely peg as being able to take on Juventus right through to the spring for this Scudetto.
Well, I'm sure if anybody knows about adversity and taking criticism, Rafa Benitez knows how to deal with that after his time at Chelsea. Gerard, it's an absolute pleasure to have had you back on the show today, man. We really appreciate you taking the time out to join us, taking the time away from your Bleacher Report work to have a chat with us today about all things Serie A. And I tell you what, I will make this promise. It won't be as long as it has been, this gap between your last appearance and today, to get you back on the show. That's for sure, mate. Really, thanks so much for joining us, man.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, mate. Gerard Peters there joining us here from Bleacher Report to talk all things Italian football and a bit of Serie A. And something I actually wanted to get into with Gerard there, but obviously time running out away from us, being that Palermo have sacked Gennaro Gattuso, the former AC Milan and Glasgow Rangers midfielder. Palermo, who just absolutely love to go through their managers. They had so many last season. Gasperini was there, three times? Yeah, twice last season. Sanino as well was in there twice. Alberto Malesani in there as well. If you're looking here, that since December 2011, they've been through seven managers, different managerial tenures, but some of them the same manager as well. Gennaro Gattuso being number seven the seventh new change of manager at Palermo being sacked today. And it means that for Palermo, who are now, of course, in Serie B, Giuseppe Iacchini comes in to take on the role of getting them back to Serie A. There are Serie A games coming up tonight. Lazio take on Catania, Livorno, Cagliari. Napoli take on Sassuolo. We'll be wondering if they can outdo Inter's 7-0 drumming of the Serie A new boys. Parma meet Atalanta. Sampdoria take on Roma. Torino, Verona. Bologna, Milan and Chievo, Juventus tomorrow night, though. Inter, Fiorentina. That's going to be a real stormer. Cannot wait to watch that. A big thanks there to Gerard for joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things Italian football. Joining me, as always, you know, I don't think I even need to say as always anymore, because it's just inevitable that after after the guest, look who decides to suddenly show his face, Mr. Exactly. Rafa Gonzalez. Well, I guess he's not really showing his face, he's more showing his voice. I guess, and you can show your voice, because if you're looking at it on like an audio wavelength type thing, that's you seeing the sound. So anyway, I'm rambling on like a mother.
Getting a little distracted, that's fine.
Yeah, here he is. He's the big man. Raf, mate. How are we living today? How are we living large, or are we just chilling?
Well, I am feeling so good, Juice. I had to go for a run this morning.
No, that sounds terrible.
Well, nobody really likes to run, right? You run to like kind of blow off some steam or think about something else or just, you know, get out energy. And I think that's, you know, I just need to get out a little bit of energy this morning.
People put things like as gym and running as an interest. It's not an interest.
It's not an interest.
Okay. Gym and running and things like that are just things that you do. Unless you're running competitively, it's not an interest. So you're just running. There's something you do to stop yourself from getting like morbidly obese, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Really, gym and running. Like playing football, football can be an interest because there's so much you can look into it. Sports can be an interest in general, but running, unless I suppose you can be into running as in your interest could be running if you follow sprints and athletics, then it's an interest. But if it's an interest because it's something that you do and it's not a competitive thing, I don't see it as an interest. I just see it as a way of not being super fat. That's all I'm doing. That's all I'm throwing out there. No offense to you runners, by the way.
No. I mean, I was, you know, that was partially the reason why I was running today. I wanted to make sure that I lose this gut. Did I tell you what happened over the weekend, Juice? I told you I joined a Sunday league team.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Competitive?
Yeah.
Sweet. Yeah. Are we going to be, is the big G going to be starting? And if so, Raf, is this now a chance for you to reinvent yourself as Rafa the centre forward, or you know Rafa the fullback, or whatever? Are we going to see you being like Leighton Baines? Are we going to see you being like, I was about to say Nicholas Anelka, but you know probably best not to emulate him. What is this a chance now for you to reinvent yourself and kind of pretend to be the footballer you always wanted to be?
I can't think of a goalkeeper who had a worse first outing.
You're playing as a goalkeeper.
I played as a goalkeeper this week. I didn't want to, you know. But only had six players for a six-a-side team, and one of them had to be a goalkeeper.
You didn't want to be the guy that was running all day, so you figured, you know, if there's no subs, there's no way I can take a breather. I'm going to stand in goal. No.
I did the nice thing being, you know, the new guy in the group. I said, you know what? I will volunteer first for said goalkeeper position. Now, that's all fine, well, and good, but Juice, I don't think I cannot imagine the Montenegro, the Faroe Islands, their keepers probably outdid me on this first weekend, and I didn't want to share this right off the bat because it's just absolutely embarrassing, but I mean we're talking double digits here, Juice. Like we scored two, and yeah. So, and it wasn't that I was a bad keeper. No. I saved probably a good 20 shots on goal. We were just being peppered. I'm nervous to say the least. I'm nervous. I hope we can turn it around the second week.
Don't go in goal second week. What are you even thinking?
No goal.
I'm amazed you're even allowed back. But, you know, yeah, don't go near that.
And I think that's why I'm kind of allowed back, because they, you know, they felt really bad. They kind of ran out of gas really quickly, and I think the guys that I'm playing with are self-proclaimed futsal guys.
Ooh, so they've got a fair bit of neat touch and skill.
They're incredibly talented with, like, you know, immediate, like, kind of touch and, well, close touches, right?
Yeah.
So if you're playing within like a small space, then, you know, like, or a really tight space. We're talking like a tennis court, okay? Mm-hmm. They said they used to compete on tennis courts, during the weeks and stuff. And the skills they were showing me before the game, I was like, fucking right, we are gonna work these guys. I'll take goal. I'll start in goal, man. I'll sweep up later. You know, I'm sure when these guys get tired, they'll need somebody to kind of mop up the rest. That'll be me. No. But what happened is they literally have no fitness. And again, one of the guys who's on my team is a listener of the show, Jose. But they could not run past like 15 minutes after the starting whistle, and I was oftentimes left with like 2-3 on me's. Not 3-on-1s, like straight 3-on-me's, the glass goalkeeper. And it was very, very strange. Very strange. Very uncomfortable. There was a lot of diving and, thwarting of balls and coming out of my box to try to, like,
close down the angles.
Yeah, it's just... Ooh.
He did everything right, but he still couldn't stop it, really, Ref, was it?
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to tentatively say 15. It could have. I'd like to think it was under 20. Definitely at or above 15.
Yeah. Just don't go back, Ref. I'm not even joking here. If you go back, right? Because if you go back and say, I'll play in goal, they're all going to look at you like, what?
No.
What? For real? This guy wants to go back in goal after? Doesn't really happen, you know? Some keepers concede 5 on a stripped of a game the next week. You ain't stepping back in between these posts for a long time, boy. And then if you go outfield, I mean, Raf, these guys are futsal guys. No, I imagine it's going to take a bit of time, but they'll start putting the ball down on the deck, start playing short, intricate passing, you know, moving the ball around. And I'm just saying, I don't want you to... I don't underestimate your talents, you know. I know what football level we're playing at here. And I don't know, as soon as I hear futsal, I think, you know, it's going to be playing a little catch-up, man. You know, I don't want to see you go out and be outfield and then them not to be the guy that they don't pass to.
That's the thing. Although it's a six-a-side like game, it's kind of like a half field, okay? Where, you know, you're playing sideways across a half field.
Yeah.
But they're full goals, okay? So that's why they make each team have a goalkeeper, because you literally need to be kind of guarding the goal at every second of the match, because you know a decent strike from behind, you know, the opponent's half could easily test the keepers is what I'm saying. So these guys.
So you're now hoping for the hoof. Kind of smashing from long range.
My hope is that you know, these guys continue to kind of slack on fitness, and they say, we know, just can you do some running for us? And I'll be like, yeah, man, I can run for you. And although my fitness isn't the best, I'd like to think that I can run and at least make the other team run a little bit too, because I think that was our biggest problem, is that we didn't really have any challenging play. You know, I think every one of our players in the outfield wanted to kind of play around with the ball and wanted to take on one player, but got a little bit frustrated and confused when two players were pressuring him. And we never really kind of looked to play too much off the ball. You know, there's passing, but you got to move after you pass, and these guys didn't do very much of that. So I'm thinking I can maybe help out with that. I'm very comfortable in open play. I'm not very, you know, I'll be the first one to admit I'm not very talented or technically gifted, but I understand the game very well.
The word is good, Raf. You're looking for that. I'm not very good. I'm really like being abusive to you here, man. Yeah. You know what? I had a bad weekend.
Because look, fitness, heart, desire, and general knowledge and intelligence goes a long way, right? It does.
Yeah.
It does.
And you've got, two of the three.
It got me onto a college club team, okay? I definitely lack technical qualities.
What about the fitness these days? I mean, you're talking about a college club team back in the day. You had heart, knowledge, and fitness back then, Raf. I mean, is the fitness still there?
No, and that's, again, this is where we've gone full circle now, and I think we could probably move on from this, but that's why I was running today.
All right, okay. So I like it. I like that you're in training, though, man. You need to get on the anybody who's playing football, man, you need to get on the interval training and the cone drills, okay? So things like... you put 4 cones in a square, 1 cone in the middle. You start at that cone and you have somebody calling out like top left, top right, back left, back right. And you have to change direction and get back to and from the cones as quick as possible. And then you always go from the outside back to the middle and then outside back to the middle. It's great for movement, kind of adjusting, what do you call it? Turning. That's the one. Change of direction, even better. It's great for change of direction speed and for like kind of sprint out the blocks kind of thing. And you do that for a few minutes, you're knackered, man. Get into that. That's my fitness tip for the day. And I'm really not somebody that should be giving out any sort of fitness tips in any way, shape, or form. I just take them from the people that I know that are really fit today. You know, I don't participate myself. I just take the tips from other people that do know what they're
doing. I got P90X. I've watched it.
Hell yeah. didn't that kill somebody, though, or something?
You know what?
Somebody had a heart attack from like trying it. They got like the third
quite
day.
Quite possibly, because it is it's a very intense workout.
Yeah, it sounds crazy, man. You always see it at like 3 o'clock in the morning. Like, yeah, get this, and that's when you're like dazed and confused enough to be like, oh man, I could look like that if I did this. Yeah, and then you realize that it's just never ever going to happen. Let's move away from the fitness side of things, Raph, and let's talk a bit of football discussion first and foremost. Let's kick it off with the Bundesliga. Robert Lewandowski confirming that he will be joining Bayern Munich next season.
Jesus.
It's...
Wow. I don't even know. I mean, like that's... To me, that's just kind of beyond awkward. I shouldn't say anything because I shouldn't be somebody to judge the whole situation. I think a club can kind of be compared to a family sometimes. And you know, all families have, you know, the odd... half brothers and stepsisters and you know, things like that, just the odd family that kind of works its way in. So I mean, it's, I guess it might not be so wrong or so crazy to think that, you know, a player can play for one team knowing that he'll be playing for another team the following season. But for me, like, I just can't understand how that how that really...
Yeah, it must make it awkward, you know. You're playing alongside somebody and you're thinking, oh, you know, we're all giving our heart and soul for this side. And that guy's kind of like, yeah, I'm giving my heart and soul now, I guess, but
yeah,
I'm going somewhere else.
You're in the same dressing room with this guy, you know. You all walk in for a game. You all, you know, take your clothes off and you're about to put on your kits. And you're putting on the same shirt, but you're looking at one guy saying, well... does he play for the same shirt? Like, it's just something that for me is really hard.
And the fact he said that he's going to sign a pre-transfer agreement in January, kind of shows that A, he's thinking about it now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his mind is obviously on Dortmund. If he's Munich, if he's been kind of negotiating, thinking about it, thinking what he can get out of Munich, and agreeing to sign this pre-transfer come January. And it will obviously be on his mind in January, you know, signing it, kind of, it's confirmed he's going to be at Munich next season. Mm-hmm. So for Dortmund, you do have to be thinking like, well, this guy is now just more like a mercenary for us. You know, he's a hired gun that we have to score goals for us this season, but, you know, we're not going to play with him again. Like, why don't we, Dortmund now in January should go out and buy a big striker. They should go out and buy Romelu bloody Lukaku, shouldn't they? Really? That's what Dortmund should go and do. Go and pick up Lukaku, and then and then drop Lewandowski and say, hey, look, we've got half a season now to, depending on obviously how their league challenge is going and whatnot. But if Munich are starting to run away with it by January, they should just say, all right, well, Lewandowski, you're out, mate. Don't worry about it. Look, you're gonna sit on the bench for the rest of the season. You're not gonna be here next year anyway. We're gonna use the rest of this season to get some chemistry going between our midfield of Marco Reus, Mkhitaryan, and Aubameyang, and our new striker up front, whoever it may be. Why not? It's completely within your right. If you're gonna, I have no problem with this whole, you know, I'd rather a player let his contract wind down like Lewandowski has done, and I applaud him for that, rather than saying I want to move now, let me go now,
and moaning about
it. He did a bit of moaning. But Dortmund kind of coughed up a little bit of extra cash because he was on quite minimal wages initially at Dortmund. So, and it's kind of all settled. And he started the season well, and he is playing well for Dortmund on the pitch. Let's not take anything away from that. He is obviously trying on the pitch. But and as I say, I respect the fact that he didn't kick a fuss and moan.
He's a large talent in a talented team. So, I mean, he should be playing well.
Yeah, of course. But it would be easy for him to have been like, oh, I don't want to play. Oh, I can't believe this. And whatever. He's not kicked up that sort of fuss. But at the same time, you know, I do think kind of making a big announcement out of it now is just wait until January. You know, we all knew it was going to happen anyway. It's obvious that he was going to sign a pre-transfer deal with Bayern Munich in January and leave Dortmund at the end of this season. So don't announce it. Especially when you're kind of getting into the swing of things now. You're getting into the middle of September, end of September, early October. You you then go into November, December, you've got the big long Christmas break. Do it in the big long Christmas break. You know, when there is no football to be playing. And there is kind of a bit of time to announce it at the beginning of the Christmas break, and then everybody almost has forgotten about it by the time you come back in mid-January back into the Bundesliga. You know, do it then, Robert. Don't make a big song and dance out of it on the end of September. It's kind of frustrating, I think, for me, that. But great for Bayern Munich. What does it mean, though, for their front line? Are we going to see another departure, do you think, from Munich in the coming kind of few months, I guess, by the end of this season? Because obviously, Mandzukic has been playing very well for Bayern Munich over the last few years, and you know, they got rid of Mario Gomez, but you know, they've still got plenty of attacking options in this Bayern Munich side, haven't they? When you look at it, you know, you've got Mandzukic, you've got Mario Götze, who can push forward. Obviously, he isn't out and out striker in any way, shape or form. They've still got Claudio Pizarro. You wonder if maybe he's going to be making way, or do you think they have enough room now? With Gomez gone, do you think they've got enough room to bring in Lewandowski and Mandzukic, Lewandowski and Pizarro as an aging 35-year-old he'll be next season?
Yeah,
as the guy sitting way back from it and just taking his opportunities when he gets it.
They stick on that stock, they stay on that stockpile because basically they want to. They are a team competing on like four competitions at any given time. So
three center forwards is not so bad.
Three center forwards is something that you almost necessarily have to have. So they're going to go ahead and sit on that all day, I think.
Who would you start then? Out of those three, obviously, I'm assuming that Pizarro takes the back seat slightly.
I agree.
From these other two, of course.
You got to think that Lewandowski's got it because he's probably younger and more ambitious, you know, and I think that's kind of huge at this club.
So you wouldn't be a bit cheesed off if you're Mandzukic and you scored 15 goals last year in the league and off 22 starts came in, kind of destroyed Mario Gomez's chance of holding down that front man role, if you will. Bagged four as well so far in the Bundesliga season. You wouldn't, if his form continues like this, if you're Mandzukic, you'd be pretty annoyed if Lewandowski kind of comes in and takes your thunder straight away. Does the fact that Lewandowski's moving, does that make it easier, do you think, for Lewandowski to kind of be left out? Because it's not like he comes in with a big price tag on his head. You know, there's no, we paid 40 million for this guy, we've got to play him. It's actually more like, okay, well, we got this guy for free, jackpot. You know, he always wanted to come to us, we always knew we were getting him. But because he's free, it's not like he has to justify a price tag, and it's not like we can just wait till Mandzukic goes into a bad run of form and then throw Lewandowski in.
Well, I think you try to capitalize on the same thing that Real Madrid are trying to capitalize in that you're trying to build competition within the club, and I think Lewandowski is definitely someone who pushes the other players around him, not necessarily in a bad way. So I think that competition, you know, pushes Mandzukic to be better, and who's to say that maybe they don't play with two? I don't know. I think
two up front there, you can't do that because of the midfield strength, surely. I mean, Pep's already taken one defensive midfielder out to have this far more attacking kind of Bayern Munich lineup here. I genuinely can't see him playing with two strikers and kind of rolling with that. You know, I mean, you look at the options they've got.
It would be refreshing only because you don't really expect that from Pep. It's not part of his system. I agree with you. I completely agree with you. But with that much strength sitting down, it's not doing much. I don't know.
Isn't there that much strength, a different look that
maybe people aren't necessarily ready to expect or something like that.
Isn't there that much strength in the midfield as well, though? I mean, you talk about either Mandzukic or Lewandowski, there being so much strength to just sit on the bench. But, you know, Robin, Kroos, Müller, Ribery, Götze, you know, three of those guys can play. Rather than maybe four, if they play as the one kind of defensive midfielder, so you'd have to drop one of those big players. You know, Robin, fantastic last year and a good start to this year. Ribery, even better last year, was arguably the best player in Europe in terms of statistics and analysis of his play and how important he was for that side. You know, Thomas Müller's just a fantastic player, as is Toni Kroos. And Götze, their big signing for this year, who is obviously a massive project for German football for the future and still, you know, an exceptional player, talent already at his young age. So whoever you drop, there's an immense amount of talent that's going to be sat on the bench. It's all about a big juggling act for Pep at Bayern Munich for me. It's all about whether he can, and it's a very difficult thing to do, to keep everybody happy when there's so many big players and so many big egos as well. You know, Sebastian Schweinsteiger is such an immense part of German football that, you know, dropping him would be horrific, as would dropping Lahm. But at the moment, he's playing Rafinha and Alaba. Lahm is that holding midfielder. Dante and Boateng at the back is what we saw against Schalke. So there's so many people that he needs to kind of keep on side. You've still got Van
so many
Buyten
egos
on the bench.
To stroke that it's kind of mind-boggling.
It's a major task, man. It's a major task. Talking of egos, yeah. Talking of
I got a really good one. I'm sorry. Let me use that segue a little bit because
okay, all right. You take the talking of egos segue and see let's see where we go with this.
Maybe a little, maybe not as smooth as yours might be, but let me just bear with me. Obviously, Liverpool, Manchester United, big match tonight. I mean, you really couldn't have written it any better. I mean, I guess you could make it a final, but again, a ban can only last so long. The return of Mr. Luis Suarez. Now, I had read a piece yesterday that, well, it just brought some interesting kind of points to light. And it did make me think, and I just wanted to throw it at you, Juice. If for whatever reason, Luis Suarez, you happen to be Uruguayan and we'll leave you being a Wednesday fan. But he comes to Wednesday and he just, you know, he essentially gives his all for the club. He scores boatloads of goals for you guys, single-handedly kind of brings you success in one season and puts you on a platform to be even better the next. Kind of complains about, sure, leaving the club and maybe wanting to play bigger at a bigger club. But again, he's also kind of saying what he wants and seemingly getting away with whatever he wants to say. He is able to actually dive for goals, we'll say, and then even mock the fact that he has dived for goals, and just kind of openly mock that to the FA, to the game itself. Could you not maybe see this guy as a potentially legendary character if he was at your club scoring goals for your, you know, for your team, or being, you know, a national player, completely giving his, you know, sacrificing himself for the team as a whole, see under World Cup 2010, or doing his part to be the best kind of international he can, scoring as many goals as he can on the international stage. Could you not see Luis Suarez as a potential legend if he were at your club, if he was your kind of
So say if he was at Hillsborough, he would be considered an absolute legend, because he'd go down as being the greatest player to play at Hillsborough. But no, genuinely, and that's all comes into context of the club that you're talking about. You know, if he went to Arsenal and did exceptionally well, sure, I imagine Arsenal fans would say, it depends though. To become a legend, you need to stay at a club for a long time or do something exceptional. You know, score 3 goals in a Champions League final to win it for them, something like that. You know, you need to become a legend. It's thrown around a little too much these days, but it can't just be, you know, 3-4 seasons at a club and bring success with you. You know, that's great, that's fine. The word legend, though, is really like somebody who you think, you know, we want to put a picture up of him round our ground forever.
I mean, look, you have to think of it this way. The term legend has kind of evolved. Back in the day, legend was somebody who, you know, in the neighboring town, or, you know, in my case, you know, the neighboring state, in the team, you know, from the National League or something like that. If you look at baseball, for example, back in the day, the All-Star game meant something because you didn't see the other league, right? There wasn't interleague play. There were players who were legends because you didn't get to watch them. You didn't get to really hear about them. You rarely got to hear kind of, you know, national paper stories about them. And in these papers, they were blown up to be these insane kind of legendary characters. So when you got to go to these All-Star games, you saw these people as larger than life. These were heroes and legends. Now, nowadays, it's almost the same thing. I get that, but you have to kind of take it on a different basis. A legend nowadays is somebody who can cross that line and, be spoken of in third world countries or their jersey found in the slums of nations that aren't, are hundreds of miles away from Uruguay, thousands of miles away from Uruguay.
If that's what you mean, and we're taking legend in that kind of short-sighted, short-term kind of memory type thing, that hampers football and people's views in football in general, the kind of short-mindedness of fans and critics of the game, including ourselves from time to time, mm-hmm. then you could say that Luis Suarez would become a legend. But to me, he wouldn't ever be a legend until he'd done something spectacular and been at the club for a long time. It's like when they were talking about Isco having his number retired at Malaga. And it's like, no. Right. Guy was there for what, like 2.5 years, 2 years?
Right.
It doesn't make him a legend of the club. It makes him a great player. He's passed through there. Unlucky, he passed through. It will be a footnote. Maybe more than a footnote, but it will be a small chunk of his career compared to what he's probably going to end up doing with and for Real Madrid. He may become a Real Madrid legend later. Lionel Messi is a legend of the game, right, and a legend at Barcelona. Iniesta, Xavi, legends at the club.
His number at the end of his career.
Yeah, they'll probably retire his number and just ensure that nobody ever is allowed to score another goal again in case they get anywhere near to Messi's records. He's that good. Paul Scholes is an absolute legend. Jamie Carragher, not the greatest footballer on earth, but considered a Liverpool legend because he was there for so long. He went through so much with the club, did all that. Luis Suarez turns up at your door and plays 2 years at your club, not a legend. Never can be, never should be.
But if he does it
for a long term, for 8-9 years, whatever controversy he causes with diving or anything like that, if he ends up doing well for your club for 8-9 years or so, then you say he's a legend because he'd have done something for an extended period of time and been fantastic playing for your club for that long. And what would happen, those incidents would only add to the legend. It would add to making him infamous around that club and his association with that club. So he could become a Liverpool legend still. But it all depends on the type of legend you want him to be as well. Do you want him to be a legend for his football? Or do you want him to be a legend for his football and those controversies?
I'm saying right here, right now, that Luis Suarez goes down, or already probably is, a legendary football character in the sense that the stories that surround this guy, the biting incidents, the cannibal nickname, the World Cup handball.
At the moment, he is a reference. He is a reference rather than a legend.
A historical reference.
He's a reference. He's not a legend, man. Legend to be considered. If you're talking about a considered an overall world football legend,
a legend like Billy the Kid is a cowboy. Legend of the West.
It'll take a longer career. There are
positive and negative legends. I'm not saying he's.
I don't mean that in terms of positive and negative. But I mean if you're saying that in 60 years' time, people will be talking about Luis Suarez as a legend of the game. To me. At the moment, he will just be a footnote. We haven't seen somebody bite somebody in the Premier League since that incident with Ivanovic last season, back in the 2012-13 season. That was the last time we saw somebody bite somebody. It was that Luis Suarez chap who, of course, had his bit people before and was involved in the racism row as well. He's like a footnote at this moment in time. It will take more than that for him to become a world football legend, Raph. Legend. The amount of impact that comes with that word,
I understand completely and I get it. And I'm not sure whether it's for the good or bad of the game. I don't know, but he will definitely be remembered very well in the pantheons or in the grand scheme of things when all is said and done. 50 years from now, when there's football to be played, he will be referenced. And when Uruguay are playing in a World Cup semifinal or quarterfinal or whatever, they are going to make reference to him, and I think that that's I think that is the mark of a legend. I think, you know, the same way that Socrates the doctor, you know, like he's to me, he's a legendary character because I never really got to see him play. You know, of course, I've seen him play online in like YouTube videos and documentaries and stuff like that. And that's great. But I wasn't a part of that time. I can't, you know. He's a legend to me, you know. Like that's what I'm trying to say.
I'm gonna mug off your pronunciation and say Socrates rather than Socrates. But Raph, aside from
Socrates, I call him Socrates because of because
he's so great.
Yeah, no, it's that one Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I think one of those movies. Or yeah,
I don't know.
Maybe
those it was things.
Casino Man. I'm not sure.
Legend or reference?
Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, perhaps. Yeah, that's it. That's what it was. That's what it was. It's Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Socrates.
Legend or just a reference, a footnote of football, whatever you call him. Luis Suarez returns tonight against Manchester United. You couldn't write this script for Suarez to make his return against the Red Devils, of course, after the instance with Patrice Evra, the handshake, the racial abuse on the pitch, the return at Old Trafford with the Evras dancing around in front of him. It all could be happening again tonight. Who knows? No one knows what's going to happen when Luis Suarez steps onto a football pitch. I'm sure there will be moments of brilliance.
I hope so.
And there will be moments of madness as well in the League Cup tonight. How do you see Liverpool and United both coming off losses after the weekend? United with that severely embarrassing loss. Wayne Rooney was talking about how United need to kind of step up and show their force against Liverpool. Do you think United have far more desire to beat Liverpool? And do you think under David Moyes this season, we're going to see United going for the League Cup a little stronger than normal because it's an opportunity for him to bag a piece of silverware and possibly stay in his job type thing?
Yeah. I don't know. I'm completely at loss for this one. I'm very excited to watch it because I just could see this going so many ways. I want to think that Liverpool that this means as much to Liverpool as it does for Man.
Well,
Man
any
United.
Any game between United and Liverpool means
right. But you know, at the same time, I can just imagine how much, you know, Brendan Rodgers is really, you know, G'ing up his squad to kind of take this on, and you know, it, just explaining to him, you know, the gravity of the situation that they're in. You know, they can it's just such a statement, Juice. It's such a statement, and it's such a powerful game. Yeah, I hope somebody scores.
important question being raised for Manchester United as they go into this game. Where is Zaha, the man who came in from Crystal Palace after last season, was signed midway through last year, stayed on with Palace to get them up into the Premier League, and then moving on to Manchester United, has barely featured in a side that has been lacking desperately quality on the flanks. The England youngster, who so much has been put upon him already in terms of the hope of English football. Do you put Zaha in for a League Cup game, or do you actually not play him in the League Cup and you give it a little bit more respect and give him a run around in the Premier League and actually show that you're kind of serious? Because if he plays in the League Cup game tonight, Raph, for me, it almost looks like, because he's barely featured in the Premier League this year, it looks like it's kind of a, well, yeah, you know, you're still young. We're going to play you in the League Cup because that's what we always do. We play our young up-and-comers in League Cup games rather than picking, you know, a main squad. Or I think it would have been far more meaningful if Moyes had put Zaha in for one of these Premier League games that United have had so far this season. I think there is a worry of how it will look if, say, Zaha plays tonight and doesn't play on the weekend. I think that could look really bad for the future of Wilfred Zaha. You know, he deserves to be playing football. He's moved to Manchester United. He was excellent, and nobody else is performing in his position at the moment. So why not give the young guy a shot?
I mean, I understand that. I dread the situation that David Moyes is in because even if he wins, I think there's going to be a lot of criticism on him unless he just absolutely demolishes Liverpool And I don't see that happening. So
well, it was always going to be tough. Jonathan Liu was saying on Monday how he thinks that Moyes should always be given at least a season with United or a season plus to settle himself into the role. Tonight will be very interesting to see how he settles into this role. Of course, looked very good against Bayer Leverkusen in the Champions League. I wonder if cup competitions will be Moyes' forte this season with United. We will find out, because it's not going too well in the Premier League at the moment for them. They're bouncing back from that humiliating 4-1 loss to Manchester City, who of course got revenge last night against Wigan with a 5-0 demolition in the Capital One Cup. United take on Liverpool this evening. Newcastle, who are of course reeling from that loss to Hull, take on Leeds, the Championship side. That could be difficult. Birmingham City take on Swansea. Swansea, of course, the reigning champs. Will they? Do you think Swansea genuinely have a chance to retain their title?
Yeah. I mean, they I think they have the talent. I don't imagine it happening though. Like I'm not taking it seriously.
I'd really like to see Laudrup and Swansea win it again. Kind of, you know, they're such a likable side, full of likable players. I think that'd be pretty awesome. Stoke meet Tranmere, and the Baggies, the struggling Baggies, who once again took another Premier League manager's scalp on the weekend, take on Arsenal. Be careful, because David Moyes meets West Bromwich Albion at Old Trafford this weekend as well. I mean, it's not been a great start for Moyes. If he loses to West Brom at home, there might be a few people calling for the dismissal of the Manchester United manager. We're going to leave it there for today. There's, of course, Serie A action coming up this evening. The pick of the games, I'm sure. Juventus take on Chievo. Milan take on Bologna. You've also got Lazio take on Catania. Roma against Sampdoria as well. What a classic footballing tie that is. Well, I can't wait for tomorrow evening's game, though, between Inter and Fiorentina. There's a little bit of Ligue 1 action as well going on. PSG against Valenciennes. Monaco against Bastia. And a whole host of other games. Lyon, for instance, taking on Ajaccio as well this evening. Loads of football to get our teeth into once again, and we will be back tomorrow to talk about all of it. But for now, enjoy the football this evening. Take care. Thanks so much for joining us. Remember, show up worldfootballdaily.com and at WFootballDaily to get your thoughts and news and views into us. We'll read as many of them as we can out on the show when we get time. But for now, take care. Enjoy the football. We'll catch you at the same time. Have a good one. Oh, sweetie!